Hi friends, welcome to another amazing episode of Murray Musings. It's your favourite Andy Murray podcast. We're your only Andy Murray podcast, and today we are the happiest Andy Murray podcast in the whole world because it's Sunday evening and a few short hours ago, Andy won his first title on clay since 2016 and his first title in Checks Notes, 1,295 days since he won Antwerp in November 2019. Andy Murray is in the champions circle once again, and I am absolutely over the moon. And Peter, who's with me, Scott's in America, he's celebrating somewhere in a bar or at Disney World doing God knows what, but Peter's here with me and he is just as delighted with that big smile on his face. Peter, how you feeling?
Good. It's been 4 years. I mean, the Antwerp final with Stan Wawrinka, I didn't know if he would win that coming back from, 6-3 down. And he won it 6-4, 6-4 in the third set. Of course. And so I honestly was hoping for a win much sooner. He's had, three, four finals
in the past few years?
Yeah.
So there was,
we're talking about challengers, too. So he's made Sydney, he's made Stuttgart, he's made Dubai.
Doha,
excuse me. I was talking about the XO with Andrei Rublev.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll take
Doha,
that.
Doha. I forgot Doha because Doha was a mess. So, yes.
And there was also the challenger in Bielsa B in Italy.
BL.
Yep. Is it BL?
Is it
something like that. He also lost, and that obviously is what started my lifelong hatred to his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk about that. But yes, we finally made it. We're here. The win has happened. I honestly I'm so emotional that it was almost as if he'd won Wimbledon again. That's how much it meant.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, because it's been such a long time coming. He's worked so hard.
So hard.
And he didn't have to go back onto clay after the absolute shambles that was Madrid. He didn't have to go back onto clay. He could have said, right, okay, you know what? That's me. I'm done. I'm going to train really hard. I'm going to focus on the grass season. But instead, he believed in himself. Him and his team have had unwavering belief in his abilities, and it's paid off, and they deserve this so much. I'm so, so happy for them. And see at the end, obviously Judy flew out this morning and you saw her giving him a big hug at the end, and it was just so sweet and heartwarming. There's no one who deserves it more. There really isn't anyone who deserves it more. He's worked so, so hard. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah.
Should we go all the way back to the beginning and talk about his week and the lead up to this incredible title? What I will say is Scott is absolutely devastated not to be here tonight, everyone. Like I mentioned before, he is on a family holiday in America, so he's probably, gutter drunk somewhere in Disney World right now, singing Andy Murray's favourite French song, Champs-Élysées.
I saw one of his tweets saying that the past 7 days he's gone to Disney World and Andy's, made his run to the title, and it'll be the best 7 days that he's had. So I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's start with Gael Monfils in the first round.
Let's go for it. That was on Wednesday. Yep.
Now, 6-3, 6-2.
6-3, 6-2. That was not the scoreline I was expecting. Mm-hmm. I thought Wednesday was, I was devastated for starters when I saw it was Andy versus Gael, because I was like, two age-old weary warriors, they should not be playing each other in round one.
Yep.
I need someone to convince me that draw wasn't done on purpose. I know the draw is random and it's, whatever names come out the hat, but I need someone to look me in the eye and convince me that that wasn't done on purpose to be an absolute showstopper of a first round match.
Yeah.
And so I was gutted and I was like, you know, I'm absolutely certain Andy's going to beat Gail here, but it's on clay. It's a French crowd. It's yes. Gail Monfils. Everyone who doesn't love Gail. Yep. You show me someone who says they don't love Gail, I'll show you a liar. I was like,
or a horrible person, but yes.
Or a horrible person, yeah. It's just, you know, it's just not fair. And I thought we were going to have a three-set bloodbath of these two old warriors just battling it out to the death, like the tennis version of the Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, instead, it was quite uneventful. It was pretty straightforward, wasn't it?
Straightforward, yes. Yeah. I thought it was going to go to three sets too. I was a little worried. I mean, I shouldn't have been worried, but I mean, Gal's coming back. I don't know how many matches he's played in the past, what, year or two. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. It was good for Andy. It was good warm up for all of the Frenchies that he's had to play this tournament.
He loves to play a French, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
So the crowd were obviously very much not against him. I think you know he was definitely the in the eyes of the crowd. He was the underdog, wasn't he? You know, like they were supporting Gail, rightly so.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it was their homeboy, and I wondered how that would go for him, but it didn't seem to affect him in the slightest. In fact, if anything, I think he sort of fed off of it, you know, just that sort of drive to push himself harder and have maybe get the match over and done with a bit quicker. I thought he played really well. He looked comfortable, he looked relaxed. I didn't think at any point really during that match with Gail he looked frustrated with himself in the way that he was playing. I didn't see any sort of like, you know, sometimes you see him like he looks like he's getting ready to toss his racket down or have a word with himself. I didn't see much of that against Gail. I thought that all went pretty smoothly. And yeah, he seemed quite pleased in his post-match interview, quite chuffed that he got the first win under his belt. And I think just that would have been his first win on clay this season. Is that right? Since he lost in Madrid.
So. Yes. And Monte Carlo.
And Monte, oh yeah, God, yeah, the one that I've like just completely forgotten about. So yeah, no wonder he was pleased.
I whisper in Monte Carlo. As you know, and as probably many of our listeners know, I block out a lot of the losses. So, yeah, I do remember that one.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the tournament's finished the day that Andy leaves the tournament. So, I mean, I will put my hand up and say I didn't see anything that happened in Madrid this week, and just, you know, as a disclaimer as to why this is the only mention, we won't talk about Madrid further than this, but this is the only mention it's going to get, is because the only tournament that's been on for me this week has been a challenger in the south of France. And Madrid finished like over a week ago.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's amazing how it like started and finished on the same day. It's just incredible. But you know, these things happen. So back to the focus of Andy. So he got through a really comfortable round one match. The Andy Murray, did Andy Murray win in straight sets account, had a field day. I say, yes, he did. And it was brilliant. And then we moved on to Thursday, the round of 16 against another Frenchman. They kept coming. In this French tournament, kept getting hit with all these French players. Laurent Locolli, would that be right? I think is that the right pronunciation of his
name?
That
sounds right.
Sounds right.
From what I'm looking at, that sounds right.
If there's any native French speakers listening in, I
butchering these last names.
Yeah, apologies. I apologize if I've offended anyone, but please do get in touch with us and let us know if we've made a mistake in the pronunciations and tell us what is correct. So I thought we might have had this in two sets. This one was a little bit more dramatic. Uh-huh. There's a little bit more going on. First set, 6-4, one, you know, he got the break. It was okay. We got there with a nice, get the first set under the belt. I can't really, I mean, it was like 3 days ago, 4 days ago. I can't remember if there was anything major in the first set. Was it just fairly, you know, straightforward tennis until the fourth game and Andy got the break of serve? And then went on to serve for the set. Can you remember if anything else happened?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that match was a blur to me because I was half asleep and mm-hmm. I was worried. So mm-hmm. I was just clinging to my pillow, just hoping it would end.
And was he a wild card?
I honestly don't know. I mean, that sounds right. Because he's won a few events. Let's check.
Yeah. Because there was a couple of the guys he played were lucky losers. It doesn't say actually if he was a wild card or a lucky loser. So maybe he was. Oh, I mean, Monfils was a wild card. I think that's what it is. Monfils was a wild card. Lacoli was just into the main draw. So I thought we had it. I thought it was going to be two sets because Andy got a break in the second set and he was 5-3, I think. Was he 5-3 serving for the match? It was either 5-3 or 5-4, I can't remember. Serving for the match. 40 love up. He had 3 match points. And then it went to juice.
Mm.
And then I'm pretty sure there was another 2 match points because he had a couple of advantages. And somehow, he got broken back.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lacoli went on to hold his serve and ultimately won the second set 7-5. And yeah, I mean, my head almost spun off my shoulders, to be honest with you. I thought I was going to vomit. And I will also let our listeners into a secret here. I am the fool behind the Did Andy Murray Win in Straight Sets Twitter account. That's me.
Were your fingers twitching?
I literally had that account open. I mean, he was 40 love, 3 match points, right? So I had the account open, ready to. I didn't have it written out, but I had it composed in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 2 days in a row, he's really spoiling us. Mm-hmm. That was going to be the tweet.
Mm-hmm. I saw in our group chat some of the stuff that we're talking about, and we can talk about being on Twitter while Andy's playing in a little bit. But yes. But the only matches that I remember from locally are from Noumea earlier this year, and he went to the finals.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's not a bad player.
And no, decent.
It was a tough match to win, but I mean, it wasn't without, you know, the effort from Laurent. So yeah.
And Andy was so mad at himself.
Yeah.
He was so mad at himself. At the end of that second set, I thought there was going to be a racket smash. He looked at one point like he was going to smash his racket up, and then I think he like kind of got a grip of himself and calmed himself down. I think he had some notes in his bag that he had a read over. I've said this a few times before, and I said this when we were talking about like his Australian Open matches, particularly the one against Kokkinakis. I feel like a year ago, he would have lost that match.
Yes.
Fair. You know, because he would have been so angry at himself, but unable to shake that anger off or transfer that anger into
action and
action
resilience.
Yeah. And instead perseverance. It would be like, the, you know, just questioning himself. And so, but I had a feeling when he sat down and you know, between the sets, he's got this sort of like kind of steely determination on his face just now. And I thought, I don't think he's not going to let himself lose this. He's determined. He's not what he believes in himself. He believes in his abilities so much. He's come this far. He's not going to let himself lose. And I can't actually remember how, to be honest with you, I was just, because I was so on edge watching it. I can't remember exactly how the third set went. Obviously, 1-6-3. So the, you know, the break obviously came pretty much right in the middle of the set, just exactly when you need it to. And it seemed, it seemed after the upset of the second set, it seemed, if memory serves me correctly, it was just back to kind of a bit more like the first set. Andy's slightly dominating, having to,
and the variety was good.
Having to up his game, but back to being in control. And I think like not to say that Locoli didn't deserve to take that second set, because he absolutely did, because he took his chances. He spotted a couple of gaps in Andy's game, and he took advantage of them, and he pulled himself back into it. But you know, Andy should have wrapped that match up in two sets.
He had five
match points.
Yes.
In the second set, you know, so, but we were able to live to die another day, because it was all good in the end. He got the win. You could tell how relieved he was at the end of that match. He was so happy. And it wasn't that match when he did the post-match interview, but he sang. Was that
against Luca? Or was that against Mayo?
Yeah, no, I think it might have been against Luca, yeah.
Okay.
So, Pete, if you get any further insight into the match against Locoli?
No. I was clinging to my pillow just like half asleep. Today was the only match that I was like fully awake and like seated, literally, and you know, slaying figuratively for that match. And a Monfils match. But anyways, let's move on to Luca's match, because Luca Vanache is a great player. Andy won 6-2, 7-6. At the end of the match, Luca tweeted, "Positive week full of learning. Thank you for all the support and congratulations, Andy." I mean, he's a young guy, stand-up guy. So it was a good match. Good match.
It took a while to get started, didn't it? That match. I'm sure there was a delay for whatever reason, because there was a lot of chat going on. And every time I checked, I had to work on Friday. I had to go into the office and into my office in Edinburgh. So I took my iPad with me. And I kept on checking, and it just seemed to be constantly sitting at match starting, like on the app on my phone. And I was like, oh, I wonder if the app's frozen and I'm missing it here. But I could see the chat. For whatever reason, the match was kind of like held up. I'm not really sure what it was. But on Friday in my work, we were waiting for a big announcement. It was the reason why we were all in the office. I don't normally work on a Friday, and I had to go in, and I was obviously furious, because I was like, this is going to
missing an Andy Murray match. I would be furious.
Yeah,
too.
It's going to eat into my Andy Murray time, my valuable Andy Murray time. Hence why I took my iPad in with me. But we were waiting for a really big announcement on Friday, and it was really stressful, like waiting to find out what was happening. So to calm my nerves, I was like, right, I've had enough. We were all sitting in a big meeting room, and I had left my iPad up in my office, and I was like, right, I've had enough of this, can't cope with it any longer. I'm going upstairs to get my iPad, to put Andy Murray on, to calm my nerves. That's how much of a day I was having on Friday that I wanted to watch Andy's match to calm myself down. So I had to turn the volume, not that there's any commentary or anything on Challenger TV, but I had to turn the volume down and just had it on in like sort of like in my eye line while we were waiting on other things to happen. So I probably wasn't, that was probably the one match that I didn't pay as much attention to all week, because I was trying to focus on other things that were going on in my work. But, you know, I just kept on looking up and, like, you see the fist pumps and he seemed to be playing, especially in that first set, he seemed to be playing really, really well.
Yep.
6-2, I thought, oh, cool, like, it's going to be a nice, well, I always think that, don't I? And then look what happens, you know, like, I'm ready to tweet and he goes and loses the set. But the second set was tough. You know, Luca upped his game, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I honestly don't remember how it got to the tiebreaker. But I was just like, okay, I'm just going to go with it. It'll be fine. It won't, you know, be three sets, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I just kept on telling myself that. No offense, but I just felt like all of these matches that he won would just be good straight sets. And maybe that was just confidence after Monfils's match or what. Again, no offense to the level of the players, because again, it's a challenger event, but still, I was just hoping. It was more, I believe, my positivity on that than anything else. But yes,
I can't remember what the score of the tiebreak was.
That's a good question. Match.
I can't remember. Again, because it was, you know, my iPad was to my side and watching out the corner of my eye while trying to pay attention to other, you know, like to actual work, the stuff that people are paying me to do. So I remember looking at it and like, oh, I think it's match point, but I've got no idea what the actual score was at that stage. But I was so relieved that it didn't go to a third set.
Yes.
I didn't have the emotional bandwidth to cope with that, plus the stuff I was actually having to do.
Yeah.
This is why I don't work Fridays. It's too much.
I'm sure some listeners are like, you don't work Fridays?
for absolute clarity, the avoidance doubt, I'm not like, you know, a lady of leisure. I work, my hours are compressed. So I do my full-time hours over 4 days. So I earn my Friday off.
Yes, of course. Of course.
So that was, have you found the tiebreak score?
I'm not seeing it. I'm on the.
Do you know what? Regular doesn't matter. Tennis. Doesn't matter. Yeah. He won. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So, he won. You know, whatever he won, and he was into semi-final. First semi-final since Doha.
Yes.
That's about to say Stuttgart, but no, we definitely had one. We definitely had one before that. After that, So. First semi-final since Doha, first semi-final on clay since 2017, I want to say. French Open 2017.
Was it? Yeah, the Roland Garros 2017. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. So first semi-final on clay in 6 years. That's
when you say it like that.
Yeah. That's the first time I've said that out loud. That just came, that the realization of that just hit me. First semi final on clay since French Open 2017. If we've got this wrong, if there's been another clay semi final out there, please hit us up with it. But as far as I'm aware, it was French Open 2017. Because he didn't play clay in 2018, did he?
No.
No. So, yeah, anyway, okay, So we move on to the semi-finals, and he played the lucky loser, Mayotte, Harold Mayotte. Am I pronouncing his name right, Peter? I'm looking at you like you know.
I don't know. Since, honestly, I'll say it like this with all of the matches, since there was no commentator to help guide me through, like, okay, this is like the, you know, analysis and everything. Like, commentators like Mike Cation, he does the challenger events in the United States. So it's so much easier to follow, like, where match point is, the tiebreaker, excuse me, like that kind of stuff, like, is so important. And so with even just their names, I raise my hands up and be like, I mean,
do you know what?
Again, no offense to them, but I haven't heard some of these people before.
What I will say about, you know, I totally agree with you. What you're saying about having Mike Cation doing the commentary, it's absolutely amazing. And it's something that could be utilized well on the sort of European side of things. But what I noticed about this particular coverage, now I've not watched, I haven't actually watched a lot of Challenger TV recently. But what I noticed about this particular coverage is it's really improved since the last time that I watched coverage of a Challenger tournament.
Like, you mean the camera angles?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was so good. Like, it was, I mean, okay, you're watching it on, like, you haven't, obviously, haven't streamed it on your computer or on your iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was really good, I thought. Like, it was really, it was quite high tech. It was quite professional, better than I could do. It, you know, because in the past, when you've watched Challenger TV, it's been like one above court camera. And they're like, you know, it's like watching borrowers on the screen. Absolutely tiny. You don't know which player's which. Because they're so far away from you. Whereas this was like, I felt like this, I don't know if it, and I don't know if this is more, if this is across the Challenger tour now, or if it's specific tournaments, if they've got a bigger budget. But like, this was like, they had like cameras on court, they had one or two above court. Like, you were getting really good angles.
Yes.
And you were getting like, okay, you weren't getting replays immediately, but you were getting them at like changeovers or end of sets. I just thought it was really quite impressive. Hats off to the Challenger Tour and Challenger TV.
Yeah.
Watch more Challenger, I think, is the conclusion. So yeah, semi-final. First set was quite competitive.
Yes.
Andy won at 7-5. I was beginning to worry that we were going to go to a tiebreak, to be honest with you, because, you know, Mayotte just was really, he was holding strong, not letting the serve get broke. Just, he was playing really good. I think, you know, he's obviously like, I've got nothing to lose here. And I think it took Andy a wee while just to maybe figure out his game and what he wanted to do with him. But I feel like once he got that break and he got the first set under his belt, he knew exactly how he was going to approach the second set, and obviously he ran away with the second set and won at 6-1.
Yep.
And I don't remember feeling stressed watching that second set.
No, I was like, not stressed at all. I was like, okay, we've got the first set under our belt. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. This whole entire week, I've been telling myself it'll be fine, and he'll
it's
win.
Fine.
Yeah. I forget who it was, but he was at the coronation, and he was just giving the smile and then the sad look and then the smile, like, okay, like, cameras are on me. And so I tweeted that out, and I'm like, you know, this will be fine. Like, this whole entire week, it will be fine.
That was Ant of Ant
okay,
and Dex.
Yes,
fame.
I was just about to say Ant, but I was
it was so funny. It was the most accurate tweet I've ever seen. They deleted it, whoever it was. They deleted the tweet. So, but it was so funny because it was like, you know, he was just like, yeah, I'm fine, and oh no, I'm not. Oh no, I'm fine. Oh, it's a shame that it's been deleted, because I would tell everyone to go onto Peter's Twitter feed and find it, but it's not there anymore. So, I was very relieved. Yeah, on Saturday evening or Saturday afternoon when that match was finished, and just so excited that Andy was in a final. Against Tommy Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about Tommy Paul for a minute, right? Because I had questions at the start of the week when I saw the draw. I was discussing this during the match, during the final, and I was aware that in the first set it was making me come across a little bit salty, because obviously Tommy was kind of running away with the first set. But I did have these questions at the start of the week. I know this challenger was worth 175 points, so it's significantly a substantial amount more than your regular challenger, which is normally about 60 points, am I right? 60, 90 points? But why was the world number 17 an Australian Open semi-finalist playing a challenger event?
I mean,
that was my question.
I get it when, and just like the challenger that's right in between the Sunshine Double of Indian Wells and Miami, like when these Masters go on for so long, but there's a week in between where it's like, okay, you know, they lose in the first, second round, and then, hey, there's a challenger that they can sign up for the next Monday. So I get that. But I did not want him to be in the draw. Because, I mean, again, he's gone to the semis. 17. World number 17. He's, you know, gone to the Mexican Open final. And so, yeah, he's a competitive person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen people in the past... I'm not going to name particular players, but I've seen it on tennis Twitter where people lose their minds over bigger name players, highly ranked players going in and vulturing, so-called vulturing 250s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously how they build their rank and put it's how they stay, because they're, you know, that they're not winning Masters, they're not winning Slams, but they're pretty highly ranked.
Yeah.
And it's because they're going in to 250 as the number one seed, and they're playing against players who, you know, they're pretty much wiping the court with them. And that was kind of how I felt when I mean, don't get me wrong, Tommy Paul fans, if you're listening, please don't come for me, because I don't actually have anything against the guy at all.
I
quite like his tennis. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't quite understand why he was there in a challenger when, you know, let's be fair, the guy made it to the semi-finals of a slam just a few months ago. So, but anyway, I mentioned this earlier on, but like I said, I'm aware that that would have made me come across as being quite salty, because at this point I think Tommy was 4-love up against Andy in the first set, and things were just not going very well at all. And I don't think it was because, now this is no disrespect to Tommy Paul at all, I don't think it was because Andy was playing particularly badly or because Tommy was playing lights out tennis. I just think Andy hadn't got his head around Tommy's game.
Yeah.
They played each other. We spoke about this before we came on.
Just once before in Stockholm.
Indoors, hard court, very, very different conditions. Right now, we're out on clay. Tommy was a French Open Juniors winner, I think.
Yep.
So he's a good clay court player.
Yeah.
You know, the man can play well on the clay court. So I think it took Andy a bit of a while to get to grips with what he needed to do in order to actually beat Tommy Paul.
And Tommy's serve has been beefed up in the past two years.
Yeah, massively.
So, I mean, props to him.
There was a few serves in that match where it was over before it had even started. Like, yeah. They were so fast, and Andy just was not getting anywhere near them, especially the ones that he served right down the line,
mm-hmm.
right on the tee. There was just no way Andy was touching them, and obviously we know how good a returner he is. But I think we started to see Andy getting a hold of things towards the end of the first set. Obviously, by then, it was a bit too late. Tommy Paul pretty much had it wrapped up. But Andy got on the scoreboard, thank God, because I was like, I can't have a bakery here. Can't have a bagel or a breadstick. I need him to win at least two games, which he did. But it gave him, ironically, you think the momentum would be with Tommy, given that he's just won the set 6-2. But I think it gave Andy a bit of momentum. And he just went straight into the second set, obviously with a clear goal of what he was going to do. And he served first in the second set, didn't he? Or was it Tommy?
I watched it four times now, and I don't remember that.
Either way, he got a break almost immediately. It was either Tommy served first and Andy broke him, but he was two love up within minutes, really.
Exactly.
Second set starting.
Yeah, it was quick.
And then it just went on. And I think that second set lasted 36 minutes. Tommy managed to get himself on the scoreboard towards the end, you know, when Andy was five love up. Tommy finally got his game. But by then it was over. Well, I say it was over. I mean, you never know. Sometimes with Andy, you can never know your life.
The match was over in the second set, y'all. Just, yeah. Once at all, but the match was over.
I think
Andy. Because I mean, Andy was reading his serve well, and so it was fine afterwards.
Yeah, it totally was. He knew exactly what he needed to do to beat him. He looked quite calm. I think Andy looked like he was like giving himself some zen vibes even when he was on court. Like, he didn't look like he was getting frustrated even during the first set when he was down for love, and when he lost the first set, he still didn't look
dejected.
Not in the slightest. He didn't look like he was getting inside his head. It was almost like he was like, okay, it's fine. It's fine. I know what I need to do now.
Mm-hmm.
I've figured it out. Now let's go out and do it. And that's exactly what he did. And the second set, and the third set, sorry, 6-2, he played some really beautiful clay tennis, actually.
Yes. You know, the movement was great. The variety was great. Yeah. I mean, he was getting to the ball very well. So I was pleased.
He looked like a man of 25 running about that court. Look, he looked like a man with two hips.
Yes. He like he was robotic and bionic metal hip. Yes, definitely something that's, you know, post-surgery, perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we spoke about this a little bit as well. Like, at the end of the match, it was almost like there was that split second where it was like, I've done it. I've won the title. I've won it. And I think for me, obviously on Challenger TV, the feed cuts out.
Yes.
A second and a half after the final points. You can't actually see the full reaction, but he looked relieved.
Yes.
I thought in the first instance, pure relief to actually get that, finally get over that final hurdle, if you pardon the pun.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some clips now, like, that have been shared on social media, mm-hmm. afterwards, and him getting the trophy and hugging his mum and just kind of sitting down and like taking it all in, and then, like, I'm a title winner again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just really nice to see.
It's so great to see after four years.
Back where he belongs.
Yeah.
He said in the inner circle. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he never left the inner circle. But yep. I know what he's saying.
Yeah.
And does that man look good holding a trophy aloft? Or does that man look good when he holds a trophy aloft?
Always looks good with a trophy.
Yeah. It was so lovely. It was so lovely. And then, like, you see all the tweets coming in, my timeline, my perfectly curated timeline, where I really only follow Andy Murray fans. So it's just like all constant positive vibes. It was just full of Andy chat. And everyone was sharing the videos, and Judy was sharing her videos of, like, her being there, and she said that she flew out this morning, got a last minute flight with an airline. We're not going to promote them, but she got a last minute flight then, and she was able to get there, and it was so nice. It was so nice to see Andy going up and giving his mum a hug at the end. And they played Flower Scotland at the start of the match, and they played it at the end, and I think they also played Auld Lang Syne, which was a bit weird. That was a bit odd, because Auld Lang Syne's, like, you know, New Year and about leaving all your, you know, misery behind and whatever. But well, I suppose he was leaving some misery behind.
I was just about to say, maybe that's apt. Yeah. Maybe that's appropriate.
But it was so lovely actually having them play Flower of Scotland, because you know, anyone who please don't come at me and say, like, oh, he's playing for Great Britain or whatever. Because this happened to me during the Australian Open, actually, because I had my Scotland flag with me. I was given a tailing off on Twitter, because apparently I was denying Andy his birthright by carrying a Scotland flag and not a Union Jack. Which, you know, I have thoughts on that, which we won't get into. But it's so nice to have, because for so long, Scotland as a nation doesn't get its anthem played when a Scottish person wins a sporting event, because most of the time you're competing under the flag of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. You know, like when it's the Olympics, we're a team. The time that Scotland gets it is when it's the rugby team, then the Scotland national team, and, you know, like, we don't win anything. Scotland national team, we do not win anything. So we've ever had a flag raised, we only sing the national anthem at the start of the match and during the Commonwealth Games. And we've got some really amazing Scottish athletes, like some really, really phenomenal Scottish athletes. So in recent years, we've been able to, like, have that the Solitaire flag lofted and have Flower of Scotland playing. But Andy doesn't get that, because you don't play tennis in the Commonwealth Games. Tennis isn't played under the flag of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Tennis is very much Team GB. And that's absolutely fine. I don't have problems with that. I love that. I love Team GB. I love Davis Cup. I love everything like that.
Yep.
But see, to actually have them play the Scottish national anthem for him when he won today, I thought it was really, really lovely. It was such a nice touch, because he's a proud Scotsman.
Yeah, and Judy seemed really happy about that.
Yeah.
And she was panning to the crowd just when Flowers of Scotland was playing. So I had definitely asked you, you know, what it means to you as someone who's Scottish, that it was just a good moment.
Yeah.
A really good moment.
It was so lovely. And, you know, I don't know if it was like done on purpose by the organizers, or if it was just like, well, that's Scotland's national anthem, but we're just going to play it. But I thought it was a lovely touch. And he is, like I said, he's a proud Scotsman, and that, I think that probably would have meant quite a lot to him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can ask him if we ever get him on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We could maybe talk about that a little bit, actually.
Yes, I was just about to say, you want to go? I was going to do it.
Oh, go on then. Go on then.
So he was asked on ATP radio, right? Quite a few questions. And one of them is something I believe that Scott had posted on Twitter, saying, from the Murray Musings account, excuse me. Would he ever want to come on to a podcast named after him? And Andy was like, I'm not anti, but I don't like talking about myself, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
And so
he was like, never say, I think he said, never say never.
Yeah. And I don't listen to too many podcasts. And it was a really nice way to be like, no, I don't want to do it. No, I'm not going to do it. Why would I do it? And so is that a yes? Is that like 50-50?
I think it's not a flat out no.
Yeah.
I think it's very much like, you know, the I like to use it quite a lot, like the gif from Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey's character's like, so you're telling me there's a chance?
Exactly. Because I mean, so we've talked on this podcast before that I've asked him before. I think I've asked him twice now in person. And it was funny, the first time that I asked him, I was like, so do you want to come on? Because your mom's coming on. And he just looked at me like, she really is? So, I mean, there's a chance.
Well, there's, it wasn't a no. He didn't say no. He said he's not against it.
Uh-huh.
It's just that he doesn't generally like to chat about himself.
Uh-huh.
We can coax it out of him.
Yeah.
We can
I'll talk to him again in Cincy.
Yeah, we can coax a chat out of Andy. We'll make him feel very comfortable. We'll make sure that Scott doesn't have his cardboard cut out in the background.
Uh-huh.
Because I can see how that might make him feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like having himself looming over the shoulder of the person he's talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Be a bit weird.
Just a little tad.
We can make sure that Scott doesn't have his Andy Murray pillow that he likes to cuddle.
Uh-huh.
Make sure that's not on show. We could, like, we can be professional. Well, me and you can be professional.
I was quiet for a second and I was like, but I'm internally freaking out. But yes, I can be professional.
While we're talking about being professional, let me share the story that you didn't know about, that you just found out about on via my my comment on Scott's Facebook page, where he promised that we would be professional.
Mm-hmm.
So we've not, I mean, we've not really spoken about this much, like from back in December when Scott and I went up to Battle of the Brits in Aberdeen. And there we were playing as Team Scotland. There was a time that tennis in Scotland got to be played as Team Scotland. Went up to Battle of the Brits in Aberdeen, and Scott and I managed to convince people that that we were professionals, and we weren't in the least bit biased, and we got media credentials, which allowed us to go behind the scenes after the matches and take part in the media huddles. It was a very, very small media pool. So we got quite good access to Andy and Jamie and all the other guys that were there, but it was obviously mostly wanted to speak to Andy and Jamie.
Uh-huh.
We had to sign a form promising to be professional. So by that, we were not allowed to like ask them for pictures, or in our case, I mean, they didn't say this to us, but this is what it was inferred, like you can't ask him to come on your podcast when you're speaking to him, because like we've given you the privilege of being here and being able to come back and actually speak to him and get clips for your podcast, but you can't be like, yeah, we do a podcast. Fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. So anyway, I asked Andy, one of my questions that I asked Andy was if he could have chosen any Scottish celebrity to play doubles with at Battle of the Brits, who would he have picked and why? And he said it was Lewis Capaldi, and that was fun. So when I was saving that voice note into my phone, I saved the voice note as Andy fucking Murray, !! Because I was so excited that I'd gone to speak to Andy Murray. And then the next time that I was chatting to him, and I had my phone again, I had my phone held out in front of him to like make sure I caught all the words. And he was sitting down and I was standing up. So I was like, kind of, you're slightly leaning over him a little bit. And I didn't realize immediately that I had my phone turned screen up and it was lit up. So he could see my screen and he was looking at my screen as he was talking to me. And he saw Andy fucking Murray. Four exclamation marks.
Saved. Good job, Claire. Notes.
So, I mean, I caught his eye. Like, he didn't say anything to me, right? But I caught his eye and I, like, whipped my phone around the other way. But he totally saw it. He's far too much of a gentleman, I think, to ever say anything. But I was like, fucking hell. It was all going so well.
So professional. I love it.
And then I think my other one was saved as, we got to ask Andy a question, 11 exclamation marks, and he saw that as well. So
perfect.
Yeah. So when I say I promise I'll be professional, like I promise I'll be professional.
Yeah. And we've been pretty professional with all of our other guests. So yeah, I think we can do it. Let's go back to Judy Murray and talking about how she was on a certain air carrier. She just posted on Instagram 38 seconds ago. So glad that she had a direct flight from Prestwick to Marseille this morning in time to watch the final. She said, hard to believe the first ATP Challenger Tour title for Andy was August 2005 at Binghamton in the United States. By October, he was on ATP Tour and reached his first final in Bangkok versus Roger Federer. And we had just recorded our last podcast, and I had said that was one of the matches that, you know, I first saw him and I was impressed by him. So even though it was a loss, like I said, I usually don't love losses. It was a great final.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, maybe.
And then she said time flies and still fighting. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Time flies.
Yep, 17 years since that final, that first challenger win.
Yeah.
So
happy.
Maybe it's going to be a precursor for a very good rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And before we wrap up, because we're just here to talk about Andy and this amazing day. Before we wrap up, Andy, apart from Tommy Paul, Andy only played Frenchmen this week.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's records against the French speaks for itself. This man loves to beat French players, because Peter, you found the stats.
Yes, only 19 losses, 85% win percentage, 112 versus 19.
That's incredible.
Perfect.
And his very
not
first
perfect,
match.
Perfect, but perfect
almost
for me.
Almost perfect. Yeah,
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I've seen a few wins.
His very first match against a Frenchman resulted in a loss.
Uh-huh.
Very first match, and it was against Joe Wilfried Tsonga. Way, way back in 2004 at the Nottingham Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to lose... I'll take the loss to Joe Wilfried Tsonga.
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to be any of them, I'll have Joe. I'd take a loss to Gail. Not right now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have taken a loss at the start of this week. But if I'm going to take losses, I'm taking them against Joe and Gail. I think that's all right.
Yeah. I've seen two of his losses. I've seen them in Cincy against Puy and Gasquet. Yep. So that's why I was like, perfect. Yeah, just perfect.
Was that since 2018
and 19? 18
yeah.
and 19.
Mm-hmm. 18. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean,
that was a long time ago. I mean, he's won
exactly.
He's won two titles since then, hasn't he?
Yes.
He's won two titles since then. So. So yeah, that's us. Like, what a day it's been to be an Andy Murray fan. And I tweeted, like, it could be one of the most perfect Sundays ever because sun's shining, Andy's a champion again, and tomorrow's a bank holiday. What more could you want from a Sunday?
Yes.
Perfect. And on that note, we are going to leave you there. We hope you enjoyed this little roundup. We hope you had an amazing Sunday, whatever you were doing, celebrating Andy's win. And we'll see you again, hopefully pretty soon, because I think he's off to Rome after this. So let's keep our fingers crossed that today is just the start of a new winning chapter for Andy. Oh, and also I want to apologise in advance because Scott's not here, so the editing, as it has been for the past couple of episodes, is going to be me, which means no editing really, just a sloppy upload and no Andy at the end of it either. I promise we're going to get that fixed again soon, because I know some people, Karen McGlynn in particular, are missing Andy's outro. I just don't, I'm too old to figure out how to do it myself. I need Scott to show me. He'll be back from holiday soon and we'll get that sorted, I promise. And on that note, thank you very much for listening, Peter. It was great to see you. He's been Peter, I've been Claire, and we have been discussing Andy Murray's fabulous victory. Over and out.
Thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye.